Hello and welcome back to Foolishly Faithful. This is episode 38. The date is Wednesday, April 17th. And will you look at that? The Mets are above 500 for the first time in I don't know how long.
Woo-hoo! It's been
Yes.
like at least, I mean, a calendar month's probably like 7 months, 8 months since we've been above 500, probably more than that, right?
Long time. I truly don't remember last time when we were above 500.
And it was great.
It's been quite a wild week. The Mets just got off their first series sweep, and their first sweep at home since June of last year. So maybe it's been at least since then. We just got our fourth series win in a row, coming off of our 0-5 start. The team is rolling. Every position's taking part. Batting's hitting. Pitches is pitching. Relief is relieving. Bases have been stolen, double steals. We're doing all sorts of things in this bounce back week where we finally learn how to win again. And it's been quite an improvement over where we were last week, which was 4-7. So just a quick recap of what happened this week. We finished up the series in Atlanta with a 16-4 walloping of the Braves. So it felt great. Came home to Kansas City, and won 2 out of 3, and then just swept Pittsburgh for a three-game set, and now the Mets fly off to the West Coast to see the Dodgers and the Giants. I'm actually mistaken. This actually might be the third series win in a row, not the fourth. But regardless, the Mets are playing great. Let's get some of our reactions to the week. Steve, you want to
No,
start us
you're right.
off?
It was the fourth or the fourth series win in a row. You're right.
Fourth or third?
It's the fourth. We beat the Reds, we beat the Braves,
Oh,
the Royals, and the Pirates.
wow. I forgot about the Reds. I forgot we played the Reds before that. You're right.
They're a forgettable team, you know?
That's right. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah, I'm pumped on the Mets this week. I mean, first off, they've just looked good. Like, forget about just the winning. They've looked good. Since they started winning, you know, we've gone what, 12-3 over our last 15 games? No, that can't be right.
I think 10 of the last 11, maybe.
10 and 3 in the last 13. But even the three losses looked good. The loss against Cincinnati, we were up for a lot of the game, blew it towards the end, had like one bad inning. The loss against the Royals, we were down huge and we just kept chipping away. We just never made it all the way back. And I think the loss against the Braves too, we had a really good game. We were down big and we just kept chipping away. So like that to me is my biggest takeaway off of this is like, we've been getting behind and we've been coming back. The bullpen has been holding. The starting pitching has been keeping us in games even when they don't have it. And like they're playing with heart. You know, last time I missed last week, so I missed some of the euphoria from winning some games. But we were talking a lot in the first episode after the season started about how little heart they were looking like we were playing with. This team's got heart. Everybody's contributing. It's somewhere between the replacements and the bench mob from the last couple of years. It seems like everybody's coming up with a big hit. You know, I think last night Beatty went out of the game with a hamstring injury, and my first reaction was, oh my God, he's hitting so well. He's like been killing it for us. And then Wendell comes in with a big hit, his first at bat, gives us the lead. Or she tied the game, I'm sorry, with a double down the line. Everybody's contributing. It's feeling good. We're rolling right now. I can't ask for more at the moment.
We're looking great. We're looking great. And yeah, it's fret about the bench mob, the replacements, and all the next man up terminology we've had for this team over the past few years.
Yeah, I really like what the Mets are doing this past week and overall. You know, I was very critical of them the previous 2 weeks, especially about some certain players. And it's a relief that, you know, we're finally like hopeful again, and our hope is being, you know, paid off. Like Steve said, like everybody's playing their role, pitching's looking good, you know. I think they're looking really well behind the plate and also like on the base paths too. You know, we have like six or seven stolen bases in the past six games, maybe like nine walks. You know, it's the stats that don't really look pretty that, you know, win the ball game for you. Like they talk about it all the time in Japanese ball. That's why Ichiro is such a good player. It's just like it doesn't matter if, you know, you're hitting a home run if you got nobody on base, but if you got a runner on second with no outs, that's something you could work with. And that's more of a realistic situation. in terms of what we have right now. You know, our only power hitter at the moment is Pete Alonso. Everybody else is kind of, you know, just getting like doubles out into like center field, you know, and that's what we need to build off of, you know, play to our strengths and not expect the most. And, you know, like one thing, like I want to like kind of touch on, I was really high on Alvarez for like the first 2 weeks. I thought that he should have been in the four hole, but he's been kind of slowing down, you know, probably contributes to like his youth, you know, come out with like a hot start thinking that you're the shit, and you know, people figure you out and you start slowing down. And on the flip side, like I really like what I'm seeing out of Marte. I mean, not Marte, McNeil. You know, I was so critical about him, but in the past 7 days, like he's batting like over 300 average. He's drawing walks, he's getting RBIs in, stole a base the other day.
I'm glad you brought up McNeil, because I was gonna make you talk about McNeil, just of how harsh you've been with him. He's looked like the McNeil of old. He is slapping the ball over the place. He's not trying to hit home runs. He's just going with the pitch, making contact. Good things are happening. And Harrison, like the first win we had in the Pittsburgh series, where we got like, it was a tight game, and then they scored 3 runs on us. We scored 3 runs right back, and then we took the lead. Harrison Bader is going to get a lot of credit for that win, and he absolutely should. But like that rally started because Jeff McNeil struck out and ran to first base. And I love to see that. And you see that so rarely. And like, I've seen that more and more with the Mets like lately. Like someone strikes out and they're running to first base at least. Like, you know, they're not going to make it all the time. They're 99.99% of the time you're not going to make it. But Jeff, like, it almost looked like he swung at that knowing where that ball was. And then like ran to first base, and then he got that double steal, like you had mentioned, that DJ Stewart was on the back end of. So he got a stolen base. I think Alvarez got a stolen base today. Mets are hustling. It's just a pleasure to watch right now. And you can listen, like when you're watching all the games, Gary Cohen is starting to sound optimistic. Like in his voice, you got to hear it in his voice. And he's just like, well, they're looking good. Like he's got that like Mets fan, like, well, like his voice.
Alvarez, like an October team.
let's get through April, but I like it though.
Yeah, but it's such a refreshing feeling after that first week. After that first week, I was so down in the dumps. I don't know if, you know, that whole shakeup with Rhys Hoskins, you know, got into Jeff's head. If it was, you know, the team deciding that he should be the cleanup hitter, but just
him and Marte.
Well, no, I think he was number four for the opening day lineup.
He was. I'm just teasing.
But like him and Marte swapping positions, you know, let them both fall into a position where they were comfortable. And maybe now that some of the pressure's off Jeff, and you know, also the pressure of, you know, the media talking about him and Rhys, he could get back to his game. And like you mentioned, him hustling down the line to first, you know, that's what we knew him as. We knew him as like the hard-nosed hustler. And now that he's showing that, he's going to get into his comfort zone. And, you know, maybe he'll sneak into the two, because as nice as Marte's been, I think he struck out 9 times in the past 6 games. And we can't have that at the top of the lineup. And then aside from that, the only thing else I really want to mention is, you know, our starting pitching. You know, we thought that we were going to have a lot more with Senga and, you know, our Hall of Famers that left us last year. But Quintana and Severino have been workhorses. They've thrown like 21 innings. They have high strikeouts. You know, they're maybe don't have like the most wins like that we would like to see right now. But, you know, that's realistic for the team. We're growing pains, we're figuring it out. And like I feel like Mendoza's doing a lot of like over managing with the pitching, but as long as our pitchers stay healthy, I'm not going to be upset about that at the long run.
Yeah, everyone's stepping up. It's
five
really
innings, six innings here for a pitcher. As long as our bullpen, who's been doing amazing, comes in and does their job, I'll take it.
It's nice to see. I feel like everyone is stepping up,
and you know, it's kind of like next man up. But I mean, it's not even like next man up. I feel like everyone's like been on board. It's not even like anything like that. Thankfully, we've been okay. But it's everyone is just really contributing, even off the bench. Even if you're like DH, everyone's kind of getting their hand in. You know, what's name has been rotating. You know, DH and like bench and whatnot. He's been doing a solid job of there, and everyone just really like playing well, and they're playing to their strengths, and they're just doing what they can do. I think McNeil is, I don't even know, I feel like even in the field I'm watching him, and like every play he gets, every ball that comes to him, he's like, he's just like aggressively like throws it like immediately to second or like first, and he's like, he's really like on it. Like I feel like defensively he's been really solid this past week. Like even ball, I think there was a ball like today, it was like,
oh, the
like,
one off his chest, the high hop.
Yeah, it was, oh, like, fastest ball hit. It was, like, 112 miles an hour off his chest. Like, he just, like, got right in front of it, like, smacked it down off his chest, and then, like, threw it, like, wherewithal, like, throw it to second and turn two. And I was, like, that's crazy that he even, like, got that, like, didn't miss a beat, but, like, knew where the ball was. Yeah, good for him.
And that play that he made last night.
Yeah.
That play last night where they were going to, there was a runner at first and third, and there was like a ball hit up to Lindor with the runner stealing, and he flipped it to McNeil, and the runner was called safe at second. And McNeil had like the wherewithal to throw the ball to first base to get the out there and saved a run.
Yeah.
Just to your point. Like,
yeah, he's been great. He's really secure in that spot there. Not that there was like any doubts, but like, I think we first all had our doubts initially, like he's, but no, I don't think there's anything else to say about him. Like he's great. He's clearly listened to the podcast, took our notes, you know.
Yeah, they're all playing locked in. I think that translates over to the defense as well, where if they're hitting, they're gonna bring into the field with them. Obviously there's some players who will play great defense no matter what. Like I'm thinking Lindor, and no matter how poorly they're hitting, but he is just, McNeil especially has been really spectacular as of late, on both sides of the ball. Yeah, as a group, I'll echo everything that you guys have said so far about bench players, momentum, good chemistry, comebacks late. It's been great to see this kind of ragtag group. I think, you know, back to the offseason when so many people were talking about David Stern's not making enough moves for big names. You know, he's taking kind of the Milwaukee Brewers approach. I mean, I forgot who sent that text in or the tweet that was in our group chat of like, what, a group of no-name random guys coming through, winning ball games late on some timely hitting and good pitching. It's like, sounds like a team made by David Stearns. So maybe that's who we owe it to, are all these players like the Tyrone Taylors and Joey Wendells coming up at times when they need and just producing and doing with good defense, because that's really been the key. I'm more curious how they just were able to turn it on like this, because I think going into that final game against the Tigers before we had the walk-off for our first win, it looked like we were just dead in the water and looked like there's no way we can change.
You mean somehow, we're 0-5?
When we were 0-5, exactly. And I just don't, yeah, it's crazy how fast that changes.
I mean, do you think it's something that you're 0-5, like clearly it is down in the dumps? They're all at home. Like, get on the road, get out of there. Like, the fans are probably booing you. Like, get the hell out of here. You're getting, like, you guys suck. Like, it just mentally just clears their head. Like, what is it? Like, last year we were like terrible. And then what happened? Like, a calendar month changed. It went to like April to May or something like that. And then all of a sudden we went on like a 5-6 game winning streak or something. Like, And maybe just something like that just changes things. And now we got some momentum and let's keep it rolling.
I'm going to echo what I said last week. Potentially all the rain delays, you know, throws people off their game when you're expecting to go to work one day and, you know.
Yeah, especially when you're already losing. It's like, all right. It's like, I want to just get it over with. And then, you know, you have to wait again. And it's like, oh, I wasn't planning to play yesterday's game today. And then so on.
And I think it also really, like, was big that when they came home and they got that standing ovation. It helped that they were winning, right? And, like, I do think it's like nice to have the support of fans. It seemed to mean a lot to all the players when they like talked to them after the game. That first game back was against Kansas City. Yeah, I felt like it meant a lot to them. I think the fans are like behind them. it's easy, you know, it's easier to get behind a team that's winning a little bit, obviously. Yeah. It's just fun to watch right now.
I'm glad. And it seems like it's a two-way street of the energy it's being fed on from the fans and this team, which I guess most sports are, but I don't know. I guess the Mets more particularly feel like that's the case often enough.
Maybe we have a little bit of a disadvantage playing like in the Northeast in April. You know, not always guaranteed warm weather or dry weather.
Yeah.
You know, maybe.
But if you look at the Marlins. I mean, the Marlins playing right. South Florida.
You got me there.
Playing a dome, and they were, I don't know what they were, 0-11, 0-10 to start the year.
And where's their chemistry, though, you know?
Right, right.
They don't have David Stearns.
At 0-5, we could have gone the way of the Marlins and proceeded to lose six more games. But for whatever it was, you got to make that. I guess that's what's important is like we had a team that said enough is enough. We're not losing games like this anymore. We need to do something else. And they found a way to change it and turn it around.
And like, even all of our losses, they were scrappy losses. There was maybe like one or two like blowouts. You know, the Monday night game against Detroit, we blew it in the 10th in extra innings after going like shut up all game. The Braves game, we almost came back. You know, Pete Alonso hit the home run in like the 8th, I think. And, you know, I thought I was witnessing a comeback. They've all been scrappy losses. So it's not like, you know, we're laying down and dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did want to bring up, just because I think we were talking about it earlier, especially you and I, Eric, Lindor, you know, like he's like, we're winning all this despite Lindor not really hitting. Which is great. Like our third hitter is not really hitting much and we're still winning games. We're still scoring a lot of runs recently. But the weird thing about Lindor, who's hitting 150 as of today, is he's hitting against left-handed pitching and he's hitting well against left-handed pitching. Like right now going in today, he got, I think, I'm not sure what his splits were today. I think he got one hit against a lefty, one hit against a righty. But going into debt today, he was batting .316 against left-handers and .080 against right-handers. I mean, obviously you see a lot more right-handers, right? Like, but that's stark. That's really stark. And like he has two more hits against lefties than he has against righties. And he's had, 45 more plate appearances against righties. In 45 more at-bats, he has two fewer hits. It's crazy. Yeah. Sorry, plate appearances. But two fewer hits. It's crazy.
Yeah. So I get, so that made us question, and it's not crazy. It's been done before with other players, although I can't name anyone right now, but at what point do you consider not being a switch hitter anymore? I mean, if it's that stark, right, you might as well, do you give it a shot? I was curious too. The other night I looked up, I was on his Baseball Reference, in one at bat last season, he bat right-handed against a right-handed pitcher and he had a hit. It was the one
he did that. He did that this season too. Actually, he's already batted righty against a right-handed pitcher when Luis Guillorme pitched again for the Braves. It's not quite the same, but he did do that. Said he often switch hitters will do that against like knuckleball hitters or like position players because the ball just comes in so much slower.
Interesting. All right, so maybe that last year's stat was a similar ordeal.
It might have been. It might have been.
Is he traditionally stronger batting on the left side of the plate versus the right?
No, he's a natural. Huge... He's a natural right-hander. So I think
is that
batting
true?
Righty. I think he's natural, isn't he? He must be.
For his career, he bats .290 left-handed and .265 right-handed. So it's not a huge difference.
Against lefty or against righty, you're saying?
When he bats versus left-handed. Lefties. I'm sorry. So when he bats left-handed against righties, he bats .290.
No. So he's usually better from the left side?
He's usually better from the right side. Not according to his career numbers.
Wait, are we saying – what? I think we're confusing our directions.
So against the left-handed pitcher, against the right-handed pitcher, he's better lefty.
I'm sorry. You're right. You're 100% right. I'm sorry, Eric. Against the left-handed pitcher, he's batting – 289. You're right. He's batting. My mistake. Right.
Versus left-handed pitchers, which means he's in the right-handed batter's box on the third base side. Okay. Just making sure. No, I'm saying, and it's clear too, right? It's like his. I think they're saying on the broadcast today, his swing as a righty is so much more level. He's hitting a lot more line drives, And when he's a lefty, he's looping it. He's like going down to a knee on some big swings, and he doesn't have the same focus. It looks like a very different swing. And I forget who said this, but someone said when you're in a slump, you have to break out of a slump on two different swings. So I'm sure mentally it's a part of it as well. It's not just one side. It's two different swings you have to work on.
That's the beauty of the sport, where, you know, there's some people that aren't even capable of this. And, you know, he could go back and forth. I can barely catch a ball with my left hand and my right hand. You know.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to mention that I was excited about to see was just some of the clutch performances, obviously from some of our bench players, but also, I mean, Harrison Bader is looking like a clutch god. And maybe it's just selective memory, but I feel like when he used to play for both the Cardinals and the Yankees in the past few years, I feel like I remember him being very clutch. And maybe I'm just choosing to remember that at this point, but he seems to just lock in, and he seems to just want to make it happen. He seems like he's energized, and he gets fired up, which you like to see in the late innings when the team needs it. So I'm happy to see Bader making waves with the glove, of course, but with the bat. I mean, the home run today, the first pitch ambush, that was fantastic to see. So yeah, looking forward to seeing him continue to thrive, because I don't know, it seems him and Pete have great chemistry, obviously, former college teammates. So that's another guy.
One other quick reaction I wanted to give a shout out to, because we haven't mentioned him yet, is Jose Budo. He's had a hell of a two starts so far this year. Gave us a really nice spot start again with Miguel getting hurt. So far, as both of his starts, he has six innings pitched. He's given up one run overall. This is 0.75 ERA in 12 innings. Been really solid for us. Just wanted to give him a shout out.
Well, absolutely. I think this is what we expected from him last year. And, you know, we personally saw him when we were in Philadelphia, and he kind of got shelled. And, you know, we knew that he had, you know, big strikeout potential, you know, great pitches. And just where our starting rotation was at the beginning of this year, you know, he didn't really have a spot. I think that, like, he deserves it now. Like, going forward, he definitely has it until Senga comes back and potentially past that. Because as decent as Hauser's been, I like what I see out of Budo more. And he's young. If he could, you know, develop him in the big leagues, I'd like to see where he's going.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that he's staying up. They're not going to send him back down. I mean, and it makes you think about, you know, Miguel, who seems to be forever injured, or, you know, go through these spells of fantastic months to absolutely detestable months, and then can't work out of the bullpen. And it's like, at some point, like, man, this kid, Budo, is just going to, should just stay up and take all of his starts, whether he comes back or not. And I think McGill should have to fight for his spot when he's healthy, because assuming Budo plays the way he has been and continue to put up zeros like he has.
And if it's not McGill, David Peterson, when he's healthy, you know, that's another starter that's going to, you know, challenge both of them. You know, they already brought up Julio Teheran, and we saw how well that worked. And I think this kind of like, you know, like a preview or like a little bit of foreshadowing to David Stern's persona, where he doesn't really mind sending somebody down, calling somebody up, DFAing, calling them back, sending off like a new father back down.
We'll get to those DFAs in the second half when we cover the news. But yeah, it's hopefully, though, you know, he sees that Budo is the real deal and wants to keep him here up at the major leagues for a while.
You know who else is the real deal? I think, you know, Cowbell Man and Pin Man may need to step aside, because there seems to be a new real deal mascot in the seats.
What's his name? Tell us about him.
I had trouble understanding where you're going with that but I got it.
Max the Mets fan?
Max the Mets fan.
Max the Mets fan.
you know,
the rally pimp. What else? The Metsiah, pimp. I've heard him being called.
The Metsiah.
he was there for the first one, right?
He was interviewed like in the middle of the game when the Mets won their first game, like the second game of the doubleheader against the Tigers, by like the Tigers media. I think they came and like interviewed him.
They had no idea what to do with him. They were just like, and they were letting him just run, and they were like, oh, I guess this guy is just going to keep talking.
It was a pretty entertaining interview, honestly.
He rolled with it. I think that was so entertaining.
Yeah. It's also like, nothing against the guy, but like, he's obviously got some money, right? Like, he's sitting in the field level every game.
He has season tickets now. He's at every game, too.
You would think, yeah, but I mean, that field level season tickets don't come cheap.
Oh, maybe he has some upstairs and he's moving down. You know, it was a doubleheader, you know, on an off day.
At this point, you wear a nice fur coat, you know, they'll send you, you can go wherever you want to, you know.
I think we got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, we're working on it. Stay tuned, folks.
You know, I wonder sometimes when like sports teams pick up these like mascots, these unofficial mascots to cheer for throughout the season. And I feel like that always happens. There's always like some sort of calling card for teams that are doing well of like, well, if this guy, it's this rally bird or this rally pigeon or it's baby shark or it's who is the Mets, the fucking guy a couple years back who was the big jacked guy who was like the Donnie Stevenson. What do you remember this?
That was a fake person that it was like Pete Alonso made up. Yeah, Donnie Stevenson.
Donnie Stevenson, he's like their strength conditioning coach or something. Rally Squirrel. All of these weird fantastical ideas that people like to get behind, I'm totally for. And I think the team, like the players, probably don't know or give a shit, but I think it just it makes it so much fun for the fan base to find something stupid to be like, well, this is the reason why we're winning because this guy and his big pimp coach showed up and is being interviewed and shown on TV every single day.
As long as he doesn't turn into that crazy guy from Kansas City, was the Chiefs, you know, unofficial mascot that robbed the bank.
What? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs had like this super fan that would show up to every game. I forget his name. And I think the story went that, you know, he was running out of money to afford Chiefs tickets because they were just on so many, you know, championship runs that he robbed the bank. And I don't think he was like in his like, you know, super fan attire, but it was like linked back to him. And now he has to pay like the bank receptionist like $10 million for.
Oh my God.
You know, yeah, like he got sued in court. It was like a whole big ordeal. I think it happened like earlier this year or like the middle of last year. It's insane, like what some fans will do. You know, as long as Max stays like, you know, good and clean and positive, I'm all for it.
I wonder if the players even know he exists.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think so. I think maybe the front office does, and they're like, maybe they're inviting him to games now. It's like, oh, we like your vibe. You're dancing at the game. You dress cool. You're wearing the big Mets chain. Like, the fans love you. Here, take some tickets for the next couple of weeks. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Have you guys ever been to the Rangers game for hockey? There's a guy dancing Larry, and like third period comes around, maybe like less than 5 to 10 minutes left in the game, and they show him, and he's just randomly it's some like old 56-year-old like bald guy, and he comes out and he starts dancing, and it's like hilarious. And like for years I've been going to games, and he's always there. So like, maybe that's like their thing. He's like, they found this cool fan, and like maybe that's our new dancing Max, you know, Perko Max.
The Jets have that. It's Fireman Ed.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
There you go.
He was at every game. You know, every time like they were doing kickoff, he's throwing shit around. When they built the new stadium, he walked out because it's PSL's ticket prices too hard. He's back in the seats.
Didn't they? He like leave because of like how they were treating Mark Sanchez at one point. Like how the fans were treating Mark Sanchez, and he like left in protest or something.
It might have been around that same time, yeah.
Oh, man. Wow.
Super fans, man. Super fans.
Super fans. And I think teams know that. It's like these guys rally the rest of our fan base in some way, so we gotta hold on to them.
I wanted to give a quick note that We mentioned earlier in the podcast that we are over 500, and it's been 10 and a half months since the last time we were over 500.
Wow.
I just checked it up. June 3rd, 2023 was the last day that we were over 500.
Wow. At least it wasn't a full year.
It was the beginning of the month. It's a 7-game losing streak. We started like really dipping off. We entered the month. We actually entered the month above 500.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I remember everyone being like, "Oh yeah," like, well, all the players. Oh, just because we had a bad June. That's the only reason we're playing so poorly right now. We can never recover from the bad June.
David.
Yeah, I think we were gonna head to break soon. I just wanted to. I found some stats on these clutch genes. Just to circle back there, and for the this is according to FanGraphs for the careers of active players. Apparently, Harrison Bader is ranked 13th out of all active players.
Let's go
in the clutch. However, apparently, Joey Wendell is number 7 for all active players.
Now we know what stats they're looking at. Like Stearns is looking at.
I mean, Eric, you were spot on though. That's pretty good. I mean, who knows what a 2.82 clutch means, but
I don't know either, man. That's exactly right.
Yeah, Joey Wendell is 336, and number 1 is Adam Frazier. He's at a 5.62 clutch. I don't know what
is a free agent this offseason, Adam Frazier.
Oh, well, I guess active roster, I guess, is
I guess it's clutch like behind the plate, but definitely not in the field.
That's gotta be some kind of like it's gotta be some kind of like metric of like hits with like 2 outs and a runner on, like being like within 2 runs of a game or something. Yeah. I don't know.
If it'd be interesting to see how they calculate player splits, you go into a player splits on Baseball Reference, you can go scroll down. There's a whole clutch section, and there is runners in scoring position, 2 outs. There's one close late. There's like runners on. There's different like situations where you can show stats for.
This is FanGraphs. This is doing some quick research. We'll get back to you with the big numbers.
That's a fantastic find. And I think to your point, Steve, about maybe that's what they're looking for. I just saw a David Stearns clip today. I guess he was being interviewed for a little presser, and he says, "Like, yeah, I love like late inning comebacks and timely hitting." So maybe it literally is what he looks for when he looks for players.
That's been our MO this season
so far.
Yeah. For reference, though, just how accurate is this FanGraphs stat? It looks like Brandon Nimmo for this season is leading the Mets. So did not see that coming. Maybe because that one game, the 2 home runs game, maybe it's skewing these stats. But if you were to ask who's the most clutch player on the Mets this season, would not list Nimmo.
Well, I think he got both of those home runs when we were behind.
Oh, we were behind and he tied the game with the home runs.
He tied he tied it with the first home run, and I think the second one was a go-ahead or another tie. So it definitely factors in like the decision, like where we are in the game.
Yeah, that's probably skewing like the stats for the season, but at least for the career, Bader and Wendell, great jobs.
We'll take it.
Yeah,
really interesting.
Fantastic. All right, let's take a break. In the second half, we'll come back with some trivia, and we'll jump into some of our Mets news. We'll talk about a little bit of the roster moves, some injury updates, and then we'll jump into a discussion about the City Connect jerseys that are coming out this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Hello and welcome back to Foolishly Faithful. It is time for trivia.
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 Trivia. Trivia. And I'll pass it to Ray.
All right, guys. I know a lot of our recent trivia has been like obscure Mets or, you know, past facts. This kind of ties into that. But we're going to be talking about, you know, our big bat, Pete Alonso, to start off. So this year, Pete Alonso began the year tied with a former Met for 4th place on the Mets' all-time home run leaders. Since then, obviously, he's passed that. He's got 6 home runs on the year. And he's taken the 4th spot all for himself with a total of 198 home runs total. So, you know, 198 minus 6, 192 was the previous 4th place Met on the home run list. Can you tell us who that Met was?
So you're looking for the Met who's currently fifth all time in Mets home runs.
Oh, that's correct. Yes. Like at this point now he's fifth. Before the season started, he was tied with Pete for fourth.
Oh shoot. I'm not sure I know.
For bonus points, there's three Mets that are ahead of him. If you could think of those guys, I think, you know, the top three are a little bit more obvious, but who is currently the fifth Met most home runs overall in team history?
Okay.
I think I know. It might be, I'm between two people, but I think I have a good guess.
All right. Well, we will figure it out before we end their episode today, I'm sure. All right. We're going to jump into some of the Mets news that has happened this past week. We'll first take a look at some roster moves. The first one, I thought this is ridiculous and funny at the same time. The Mets have claimed Michael Tonkin off from the Twins because the Twins DFA'd him.
That name sounds familiar.
Is familiar, Steve. Thank you for asking. Yeah, or for noticing. Michael Tonkin, we traded to the Twins for cash about a week and a half ago. And, you know, he played a couple games for us. Then he went to the Twins. I think he maybe pitched a game or two. And then he was also DFA'd by the Twins. And, you know, when you're DFA'd, you can go to waivers and our team can claim you. So the Mets just picked him up again. And I think it's just funny because I frankly liked him when I saw him here. Maybe it was just a funny David Stearns roster move. But I also want to just see it as an infinite money glitch where we are just trading away our players for cash. They suck it up wherever they're going. They'll come right back.
Quick note actually on Tonkin. They mentioned it during the broadcast today, and it's really funny. So the only two appearances he made for the Mets this year before he was DFA'd were extra innings. He played two extra inning games against the Tigers. He gave up five runs, only one earned in the first one, and then three runs, two earned in the second one, back-to-back days, I think. When the Twins got him, he appeared in one game for them, and it was extra innings against the Tigers. So Tonkin has appeared three times for two different teams, basically in the same situation each time. So speaking of infinite loops, Tonkin is stuck in Groundhog Day.
Oh, another note about Tonkin. At least we don't play the Tigers anymore this season. So he does not have to worry about that. And looking at his career stats, he actually has 5 years already playing for the Twins. So he's already played there. At that point, he's probably like, oh, hell yeah, I'm excited to go back home. I've already played most of my career. He pitches one game and they drop. So, hopefully he can find it again.
So did we basically trade him away, get money in return, and then pick him up for free?
Yes. Basically. I mean, I think we still owe him his salary for whatever, you know, however long he's going to be on the team.
I'm going to put him in the same category as I put Jeff McNeil, where I do not have any faith in him right now. I know I was talking to you earlier about this, Steve, where, you know, he didn't pitch poorly, but, you know, in the positions where he was pitching, it just ended up very bad. I think that big loss against Detroit, obviously extra innings, you have a runner on second to start. That's something that I didn't take into consideration at first. I was like, oh, well, he just got blown up in extra innings, like he sucks. Forgetting that, you know, there's a runner on second to start it. I think they got...
I just want to correct the record here a little bit. Michael Tonkin did actually pitch before those two Detroit games.
Did he?
He pitched on opening day and he went two innings. Two innings were, he gave up no hits, no runs. He walked one, but he struck out two. Had a couple of ground ball outs, a couple of fly ball outs, then threw 33 pitches. And
that's my mistake.
I thought he looked pretty good. He faced seven batters. And I remember he looked strong because I remember his name. I feel like he was on the Braves last year. I forget exactly where else he has been. I guess
he was on the Braves last year.
I guess the Twins for 5 years.
He was on the Twins for 5 years, missed like a bunch of years, actually, which is kind of weird. I'm not 2017 to 2023. He just like missed all those years between. But yeah, now he made it back.
Glad to see him.
I forgot all about that opening day start because that was a wild day. And I was basing like all my criticism off of, you know, the extra inning game on Monday against Detroit. Because I was telling Steve, it's like, oh, well, how did he, you know, he had a ground out. I think hit Mark Canna with a pitch. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, 2-0. And that was the Joey Wendell fielding error. And if he didn't have that error in the field, that would have been a double play. And we would have got out of the inning with maybe a run scored. But that didn't happen. And, you know, he gave up a 2-run home run. But, you know, like when you think about it, like, yeah, like, you know, Steve, you're totally correct where, you know, it's like the little things that mess you up in the beginning that take away from the whole thing, because we would have got out of that inning. We would have gone to 11. But we didn't.
All right. I think this is enough talking about Michael Thompson.
That's fair. Hopefully he'll do better this time around with the Mets. He did give up 8 runs so far with the Mets, but hopefully he'll have a better second go around.
But they're not earned runs.
Fair enough. Speaking of guys who were DFA'd, feel good story of the last couple of weeks. Tyler Jay has been DFA'd for the Mets. Shortly after, was this day after, 2 days after, he had twin girls.
And that was also his MLB debut, by the way.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, right? That was the reason why I was telling that story. But right, he gets right, up. Right. I think he pitches 2 games for the Mets, and he's DFA'd to bring back the guy who we just DFA'd a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I mean, to our point last week, that we were making last week about perhaps the David Stearns era, you know, is just ruthless in DFAing people. We've seen another one. So we'll see if it continues, I guess. All right, what else do we have in Mets news? Let's jump to even better news. Pete Alonso won Player of the Week last week.
Woo.
Mm-hmm. Woo.
He crushed it last week.
Nice little award. Yeah. I mean, he had, was it 4 home runs or 2? Or maybe it was 3 home runs. His OPS was something crazy. It was like 1400 or 1500 or something.
I think 1386.
Wild.
1386. That's pretty good.
I mean, he was crushing like Atlanta, and during the road trip, he was crushing it.
Well, it's a career year. You know, he
contract year.
He wants that contract. Is he Scott Boras?
He is a Scott Boras client.
Scott Boras client.
In related news, did you see Jordan Montgomery drop Scott Boras as his agent?
Really?
After his, was it 1-year contract that he signed with the Diamondbacks? He's no longer a Scott Boras client. I guess he did not like the way he played in the market this year.
Well, he's not even pitching for them yet, right? He's still like warming up?
I think that's correct.
That's really interesting. I wonder if other players will follow suit, because it happened to many players this offseason.
Well, let's see what happens with Soto as a Boras client. So if Soto gets yeah, in contract, none of this will matter. So
I'm sure he'll get that bag. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's playing for it too. He's playing for it.
Oh yeah.
Boras will get his percentage and keep on doing what he's doing.
Yeah. But I wonder if Soto gets it, you know. I mean, I think Soto obviously is Juan Soto, so he'll get the years and the money that he wants. But I think it was interesting the way that it kind of shook out with the rest of the players that were Boras clients that were expecting kind of big deals. And, you know, these players turned down big deals from the teams they're already on, like Matt Chapman, for one. You know, they end up settling for much fewer years and less money. So I wonder how it'll shape out.
I could honestly see, like, Juan Soto, like, walking away from him and, you know, just taking whatever the Yankees offer him, because they'll throw the future at him. So they have a ton of money, and he is just playing so well for them. So when Scott Boras turns around and says, all right, well, you make them sweat so that you can get more, and then, you know, tears his Achilles or something completely random, he's like, oh, well, now I'm screwed. Like, I think Juan Soto. I don't see that happening. He's young. He's due for an injury. And not that I'm wishing it for him, but.
All righty. Go for it, Steve.
No, I was just gonna say I don't see that happening with Soto. I think he's gonna stick with Boris for this free agency and take the highest offer.
Really?
After the Boris this long, he's going for the money.
Yeah, this is free agent year. He's gonna be 23. He's 24. He's taking everything.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna make bank.
Once I was not 23.
Are you sure about that?
I think he's like 25.
He's 25.
Okay.
Still sticking young.
He won a championship at 22.
Might have been.
I mean,
like
he's 25 through this whole season. He's
he'll be 25 this whole season.
Yeah.
All right, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Thank you all for factoring me this episode.
No, I mean, it's 25 is still very young, and he'll get a shit ton of money for it. He might get a 15-year deal, honestly.
He's going for that Shohei money.
He's going for a crazy amount of money.
He's going for the Ipe money. That Ipe money.
No comprende.
All right. The next little bit of news we have is some injury stuff. As Ray alluded to, Kode Senga threw a bullpen maybe a couple days ago. It's good to see, but remember, he's still got put on the 60-day IL, so he's not eligible to return until the end of May. The article on Mets.com said that he probably would leak over into June a bit, so we're still a ways away from seeing Kodai. But honestly, I mean, with us winning the past couple games and series, I kind of forgot a little bit that he was on our team. It's going to be such a nice, pleasant surprise when he comes back to it's electrifying watching him pitch. And he's so good. He's so fun to watch. So we look forward to his return.
Oh, definitely. I miss the Ghost Fork so much. But quick question. Like, if he's on the 60-day IL, can he return to, like, any minor league games before then? Or he's out of action until then?
He's allowed to rehab within a certain window. I don't remember exactly the days, but he is allowed to come back to minor league games to rehab.
So maybe that's ideal for him. You know, if he's, you know, throwing right now, don't rush him back while we have something, you know, jiving and working. Get a couple of like double A, triple A starts and come back fresh.
I would assume if this is working as it is, they're not going to need to rush him back. They'll take an extra couple days if they need to.
Oh, especially with Mendoza's mentality, which I'm not so upset about.
Keep going the way it is.
Yeah. It's working right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a very regimented procedure for him to come back. And again, we have pitchers pitching well right now, so it's not like we're in a rush. All right, next in injury news, JD Davis, excuse me, JD Martinez. JD Martinez. That was an honest mistake. JD Martinez, excuse me. JD Martinez was suspected to maybe be on the team by now. But again, another person we're not rushing back necessarily because we're winning games and the DH spot's pretty full. But the latest news is that he will not join the team to the West Coast. So his likely return would be after that, which is at the end of the month. The Mets go again to LA and San Francisco next. And then they come back. I don't know who they play when they get back.
St. Louis.
They play the Cardinals. Okay. Yeah. So maybe that seems to be a good team to bring him in against.
That's going to wrap up the month for us, right? We only have three series left for April.
Wow. Nice. Okay. I mean, hey, listen, I also love to go out west early. I think it's great to get out of the way early, although they'll have to go back out west later in the year as well.
But a quick six-game road trip, you know, three in LA, three in San Francisco, come back home.
I'll take
especially while we're fresh.
Yeah. It's a good time to go. It's a good time to get out there.
Didn't we get Atlanta on the road?
We did just see Atlanta on the road as well. I think we'll be back. We won't be back in Atlanta until late September.
Late September.
Woo! All right. And then the last bit of injury news is Brett Beatty. Got pulled from the game last night because of some left hamstring tightness. He will miss the IL, but he will miss a few games. So hopefully it's just a little something. Hopefully it doesn't linger too bad, and hopefully it doesn't affect his swing and other mechanics. And, you know, when you nurse one body part, other body parts start to hurt and your whole shit gets fucked up. So swift recovery to Brett, because he's playing spectacularly.
Do you think he's going to make a road trip out west?
Yes. I think they're bringing him out west.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's really great to hear.
So maybe he'll be in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'd like to see him in San Francisco. Maybe hit a ball into the bag.
He's batting 300, right? Not hitting a lot of power, but he's batting. He's hitting, getting base hits. He's getting on base. He's looking good. His swing's been nice looking.
So, question. He's not on the IL. He's day-to-day. Let's say he's, like, totally not going to play all the Dodgers series at the very least, like, if that. But does that mean that we are down one person on the roster?
On our bench, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess it's a good sign for his health, though, right?
And it's not the worst thing, because, like, if we're going against studs, you know, maybe we accept the setting. Like, oh, okay, we're going against LA.
I'd still like to have our best team out there, but, you know, it's just part of the roster management. It's like, if it's going to be a short injury and it's a 15-day, you know, doesn't make any sense.
I don't remember who they sat him against, but it was a lefty they sat him against, and they said, you know, we're not going to sit him against lefties, but if a lefty's coming up and he needs a day off, like, it's a good day to sit him.
Right.
Which I really like. I actually am in pretty big favor of sitting him against really tough lefties. Mostly because, like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, like, I'm still shell-shocked from this game that the Mets played against the Giants, like, years ago. It was Conforto's, like, second year in the league. He was getting really good, heating up. And he faced Madison Bumgarner back when he was Madison Bumgarner. And
Mad Dog
demolished Conforto at the plate. He looked silly. And then he, like, went on, like, a month-long slump. And in my head, like, Madison Bumgarner broke Michael Conforto's swing. And, like, I'm actually pretty in favor of, like, holding him back against the really tough lefties for now. Well, just while he's young. Not obviously long-term, but, yeah.
No, I could definitely agree with that. Honestly, you know, the headspace that, like, young batters have really goes a long way. And, you know, not trying to downplay Conforto, because he's having a good resurgence right now in San Francisco, but, you know, he had a lot of promise. You know, tying into my trivia question, Conforto, I think, is number 8 or number 9 on the Mets' all-time home run list.
Wow, that's crazy.
Like, if he stayed with the team, he could have, like, been up there, but there were, like, 2 or 3 years where he was so cold. And, you know, maybe it started after that Mad Bum appearance, because he was always a hot and cold player.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to see if I could find, like, some video from that game, because I remember it so vividly, and it, like, just changed his whole, like, season.
He was a cyclone. I remember seeing him in Coney Island.
Conforto, I felt, always got in his head a lot. He's one of those players. I hope Beatty's strong enough to not let that happen to him. The last little bit of news before we jump into our little talk about City Connect jerseys, which are dropping this Friday. Is this stat say that the Mets have the top ERA? Or
that is correct. In the National League.
That's amazing.
Yep.
All pitchers? All starters and relievers?
All pitchers. Yeah, I checked for relievers. I thought we'd be higher for the majors, but nope, that's the best stat I could find, so that's the only one to put there. Yep.
Nice. That's great. That's crazy. That's like, honestly, crazy to hear.
Yep.
Let's they go showed Mets. During the game the other day that I think they were, at least this is before today's game, that the Mets were third in starters ERA and first in bullpen ERA in the National League.
Nice.
So
that's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm at least looking in the majors. I mean, Red Sox, Royals, Tigers, Guardians, Yankees are all above us. But hey, 3.15 ERA for the team, best in the National League. Fucking take it.
Yeah. And then in other news of good pitching, one of our top prospects, Christian Scott, currently the number 5 prospect. His ETA as a starting pitcher looks to be this year, 2024.
Yeah.
But so far this year, he's had 3 starts, 14 and a third innings pitched, 26 strikeouts, and only 3 walks.
Whoa.
He has quite dominated the pitchers down in AAA. So maybe we'll see him soon near the end of the year.
Yeah, Steve Gelbs in today's game gave a whole, like,
briefing on him and gave a report on him, and everyone speaks really highly of him. So hopefully we see him up soon.
All righty. Let's
who, before we go on, who is the Pittsburgh pitcher that Gary, Keith, and Ron seem to be gushing over?
I believe you're talking about Jared Jones. He pitched 5 innings against us, was it 2 days ago now? And basically dominated us. And then the Pirates said, oh, we're just going to limit his innings for the future. They don't want to go too far with him. They said it was always going to be 5 innings maximum. But what do you have, like 59? Yeah, 59 pitches. No injury.
50 strikes.
Want to take him out.
What 50 strikes in 59 pitches.
That's crazy. Five well, innings.
Thank God for that. Because yeah.
And then they took him out.
I thought he was going to demolish us.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, I guess the time has come to talk about the City Connect jerseys, which we've all had opinions about since City Connect jerseys were announced. I don't know when the first ones came out. It must have been 2019, maybe 2020. I don't really remember. But the Mets City Connect jerseys will be dropping this Friday. And there was a leak that came out of it was posted by someone on Instagram or Twitter that it looked like a gray jersey. It said NYC in white letters across it. It's just a leak. It did have a little bit of a purple accent, which is what the Mets have been hinting at with some social media posts. But then there's also a different hat that was apparently is apparently being sold in Japan that has the Queensboro Bridge on it and the subway lines underneath the brim and New York City in purple script. I don't know how you guys feel about the City Connect jerseys. I'm personally a little bit anxious because I don't want them to be ugly.
I am very nervous. I've been nervous for a while. That leak to me was terrible. We've all talked about it, and we all, I think, agree that it looks like something that the Yankees would wear. There's a lot of improvements they can make if those are the jerseys. I feel like there's so many easy slam dunks for a New York City jersey that, like, to give something so generic that's just like NYC with pinstripes and a little bit of purple as a nod to the 7 line is crazy.
I saw this hat that they released that maybe was like leaked in Japan. Looks like a, you know, an off black, like maybe like coal colored with, I guess, Queensboro Bridge across the front.
Yeah, the one with the bridge, yeah.
Yeah, but like on the inside about. Rim is like the like the subway lines, and I see where they're going with it, but it's not hidden for me.
I actually love that hat. I love that. I would buy that hat if it was available, but that's not the hat that was in the leaked jersey picture, which is what gives me hope that maybe that leaked one is not the real jersey.
Yeah, I hope so. The one in the league jersey, it was like, I was reading comments online. People were like, oh, I like the hat in this one. And that is just the Mets logo inside of a circle and it's purple. I'm like, what the?
Looks boring. I guess it's supposed to look like a train like circle. I don't know.
I don't know. I think there's another theory that I had when, well, the Mets have not worn their home black jerseys yet this year. Is that correct? I think they were supposed to wear it for Friday night's game against the Royals, which they did not. They wore the whites. But if you'll remember, those black jerseys were altered this season. In addition to the hats, they removed the white outline. So it's just the blue text with the orange outline, and there's no additional white on it. So I've wondered since that change was made back in the offseason, if there was going to be a white outline on some City Connect jersey. And so that's why they had to make the change, because otherwise it would look too similar. So maybe it's a dark jersey with purple letters and a white outline. That's the only thing I got.
I see what you're saying. Like, maybe it's like,
but we haven't seen a new one yet. Yeah.
Something to replace the blacks. Like, you can't have like two going at the same time.
Yeah.
As long as they get rid of that Presbyterian Health logo on the side.
That's not going anywhere.
That's not going anywhere, unfortunately.
Did they make it smaller? I remember talking about it last year.
Oh, it was a terrible
it was like huge.
It was red and white, and it was like double the size it is now. And they took it off, and they cut it in half and made it orange and blue instead.
It's something.
It's something. But we'll see. I mean, Steve, you've mentioned how, you know, there have been some slam dunks that they could do, whether it be subway tile mosaics. I think any sort of subway sign in like kind of like the black with the white fonts.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Could be cool. I would love something maybe in like the script of the old 1987 away jerseys that are gray. They say New York in script. I'd say Queens. I think there's a lot of options. And I just hope that it doesn't turn out like some of the really shitty ones that have been like debuted over the past couple of years.
I know it's a stretch, but I would love to see something similar to, you know, the neon accents on Shea Stadium. You know, you had like the neon lights with like the pitcher, the catcher. I know that they're teasing this purple color, which we didn't have back then, but you know, it's a far stretch. And I know Shea Stadium was 15, 16 years ago, but
that's where I want to go. Your favorite and least favorite City Connect jerseys are so far that have come out. Like, there's been a good amount. A lot of teams have gotten them dropped so far. Like, what are your thoughts? Like, best and worst, most like generic. What do you, just some opinions?
Well, this year the first one we've seen this year is the Philly jersey, which
that's the only new one this year so far. Yeah,
I don't mind it so much because it has like that gradient with like the light blue at the top going down to a dark blue, and I like how they have the Liberty Bell at the top. But past that, I would say my favorite from past years would be the Washington Cherry Blossoms. I think that has like a little like historical reference. And the one that I don't really love is Boston. Like, the blue and yellow really just didn't do it for me because they're the Red Sox. Like, where's the red?
I agree. I really like the Washington ones, although they discontinued them this year. That cherry blossom on the bottom left of their like logo, and like there's like cherry blossoms that are this almost the same color as the jersey in the jersey as well, which is pretty cool. I didn't like the Phillies ones. I think they look like Chargers jerseys. I do like the Liberty Bell, like you said. Pittsburgh has to be like the ugliest one.
Agree. Yeah, 100%. And it's just yellow, and it says PGH on it.
Pug. Yeah.
which is I guess, you know, the
sure,
the shorthand they use in Pittsburgh. But like, where is the, like, aside from like that shorthand for Pittsburgh, what is the connection to the city?
Yeah,
I would say at least with the Boston one, Ray, like the yellow and the blue, like those are the Boston Marathon colors. And I'm like, we're talking,
they have a little marathon runners number on the side of their arm too.
It's a lot of great little small details that I think it only really makes sense if you're like from Boston or you know a lot about Boston, as opposed to what's PGH? Like, what is, I don't know.
That's what a City Connect jersey should be. It should be like, it means a lot to the fans and nothing to anybody else.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think David mentioned that earlier, where they wear those on marathon days, or they introduce it on a marathon day where the Boston plays like a 11 o'clock game. Because it follows up the marathon.
I was just saying that Patriots Day in Boston is a big day for them. That's all. It was not really related to the marathon, to the jerseys though.
Okay.
Sorry.
Another one I do like is Arizona. It's Serpientes.
Serpientes.
I don't like that one. It looks so ugly.
I like the cream colored, man. And then
cream is sand, and they're the serpents that are, slithering around.
The Giants is pretty bad. The Giants is just white, and like they have like the foggy numbers, mm-hmm. and it just kind of looks.
I like the Cincinnati one. I think it looks the blackout looks really nice.
I hate to give the White Sox any praise, but theirs looks pretty cool. It looks like really cool. Like just says South Side on it, but it looks really classic and good for them.
It looks tough.
I agree with you.
Yeah, it looks tough. Like they're out there ready to throw their fists.
Colorado's is weird, but their regular jerseys are pretty weird with those like purple vests. So I don't mind it so much.
All right. Well, hopefully the Mets land on the good side of these City Connect jerseys. We'll see in a couple days on Friday. We're all crossing our fingers, hoping for some good stuff. Let's hope it doesn't end up too poorly, like the way of Pittsburgh. All right. Shall we move to our trivia answers?
Let's hear it. Ray, can you remind us the question?
Yes, I can. So I'll try to do it as quick as I can. Beginning of this year, Pete Alonso was tied fourth all-time Mets home run leader with this player. obviously since then he has passed them. But who was he tied with for fourth, currently fifth, home run leader for the Mets? And for bonus points, who were the three Mets home run leaders ahead of him?
So Straw is the home run leader for the Mets overall, right? Darryl Strawberry.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And then David Wright is second, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Is correct, third correct. Piazza?
Yes, I would sir. Think so. Those are the three.
Okay. So we got our bonus points.
Strawberry 252, David Wright 242, Mike Piazza 220. Pete Alonso is currently sitting at 198.
Oof.
I think I know who passed it. I'll let you go. I'll write it down on this piece of paper.
I think
I'm between two people. I'm pretty sure I know the answer. But I'm between two people.
Go for it, Steve.
I mean, is it Hojo?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It is.
It's yes or no.
Howard Johnson?
Yeah. Howard Johnson.
When you first said Hojo, I was just like, okay, well, definitely not a Japanese ball player, but I was like, wait. nickname.
I was between him and Beltran.
Oh.
No.
I was just say Lucas Duda.
Lucas Duda.
Lucas Duda might have like 105.
He's probably in the top 10 for the Mets. I bet he's in the top 10.
He didn't break top 10 because the only other Met that broke top 10 in like my memory was Conforto, which was like at 160 something.
Lucas Duda is number 9 on the Mets home run.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is Kingman close? I think Kingman might have could have been close to.
Kingman is 6th with 154.
Oh, is he above Beltran then?
Beltran is 7th with 149.
Ooh.
Who's round out the top 10? Who's number 10? Last one. Todd Hundley.
Kevin McReynolds.
Todd Hundley.
Henry Reynolds is 11. All right. We're really in all of them.
All righty. Well, Rick, thanks for the trivia question.
Before we get to that, do we think that Pete's going to jump up any numbers by the end of the year? He's only 23 away.
He should pass Piazza before the end of the year.
Hopefully.
With a great year, he could pass all of them.
All right. I hope he passes Strawberry too. But we'll see. All right. That should probably wrap us up for this episode. Thank you again for joining us as we talk about the Mets and their surging success. As always, if you have any questions, comments, fan mail, hate mail, concerns, trivia questions, City Connect Jersey opinions, you can email us foolishlyfaithfulmetspod@gmail.com or on Instagram, foolishly_faithful. As always, thanks for listening, and LFGM.